For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're listening to George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for the third hour of the George Christensen Show. I'm George Christensen here on TNT Radio. And we've got a fantastic guest up now. She is someone who actually was jailed for her political beliefs and for political organizing in Australia. I kid you not, in a modern democracy or erstwhile democracy like Australia, we had someone in this day and age who was locked up behind bars for 22 days. I may be wrong on that. We'll find out very shortly. But I'm talking about Monica Smith. Monica, thanks very much for joining us. Monica, how are you and where are you at the moment?
Well, I'm really good, but you know, I'm still on bail, so I'm where the police tell me I have to be, more or less. But
okay, say no more. Say no more. Right. Well, you know, this is the problem. You are out on bail for. I mean, we need to talk about this because I think this is the first time you've been on TNT Radio, and so there's listeners all over the world, and they will definitely want to hear the story of someone who is a political prisoner, who was a political prisoner and is out on bail essentially because she was a political prisoner. So I've known you for some time, Monica. You started the movement Reignite Democracy Australia, which was basically come into being as a pushback to particularly the Victorian government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, but it sort of became more of all governments' handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, and then obviously a lot of other issues as time has gone on. But talk us through how being head of this movement and the public face of this movement led to your arrest and why you were arrested, how long you were jailed for, why you were jailed, and all the rest of it, because this, it beggars belief when you hear the story. So tell us the story, Monica.
Sure. I mean, even telling the story myself now, it almost doesn't feel real, or it feels like I'm telling someone else's story, but it definitely happened. So, the first time I had an interaction with police, and I'll just preface that I was brought up in a really respectable home to respect authority, doctors, government, all that sort of stuff. So this was pretty unusual for me to see the police as some sort of enemy, because they weren't to me. They were heroes to me. Anyway, so the first time I got arrested was actually October 2020. At a protest. I was a journalist. I had a permit at the time, which I'm embarrassed to say I even ever filled one of those out, because it's pretty ridiculous. But according to their rules, I had everything I was allowed to be out according to their own rules. And they arrested me and put me in the back of a divvy van for 45 minutes. And to be honest, it was pretty shocking.
This would have been an anti-lockdown protest. What was the protest?
It was actually a protest against Daniel Andrews dealing with China. So he was trying to sign in the Belt and Road Initiative. So it wasn't actually lockdown related, but it was during lockdowns, and that's why it became a big deal. But anyway, I just wanted to build it up to that. So, you know, that sort of started happening after I started driving a big bus around Melbourne, a big passenger bus with Sack Dan Andrews on the side. That's really
now,
where
Daniel Andrews, just for people that don't know overseas, is the state leader of Victoria, the premier of Victoria, akin to a governor in the USA. But go on, Monica.
And you could compare him to a Justin Trudeau or a Jacinta Ardern. For their knowledge that they're
or a Xi Jinping.
Yeah, well, sure. But anyway, the point is, so that's when I started getting recognised, and that's also when I started welcoming negative attention from the police. So they would, follow me around with the bus and stuff. Anyway, they more or less left me alone for a year, and this is the story you're looking for. But basically, I don't know if the people know, but Victoria was in lockdown for, I think, 270-odd days. It was the worst lockdown
city in the world. Yep.
In the world, that's right. And I lived through all of that and stopped by army, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it was progressively bad, you know. Anyway, so I got arrested for promoting protests. That's it. Okay. So I did find loopholes a lot. So, I was a journalist. So I would basically say, I'm going to do journalism at this protest. But of course, you know, inadvertently, it's doing what it's doing, right? Anyway, so the loophole stopped working, I guess, and I got arrested. And basically, I was in prison for 22 days, not because of the actual charges. Now, the charges are incitement. Incitement is meant for people who say, let's say, George, I incite you to commit an armed robbery, but I don't do it myself. I would still be liable for that because I incited you. Maybe you're vulnerable or something. That's what incitement is meant for. But they found a loophole to use that to basically say that
Can I pause this for a moment and just ask the question? Because I'm a former journalist. I'm a journalist again now. We're a journalist. I think you're probably doing journalistic work again. You're probably still a journalist. Now, what I learned as a journalist is that reporting on important events is one of the key things that a journalist should do. So a big rally that's going to happen during lockdown and you, you know, however it was written, you telling people, informing people about this as a journalist, surely to goodness, that has to be part of the journalistic endeavor. but they essentially made that illegal during the pandemic in the state of Victoria. So sorry, I just needed to make that point. But go on with what happened with this charge of incitement, which is just so bizarre. It's really a charge against journalism itself.
Well, it was really never about, you know, the rules anyway. That I was getting a progressively bigger audience, and that's really what it was, obviously. But anyway, so when I got arrested, you know, they gave me horrendous bail conditions, so I could have gotten out that night. But the bail conditions, George, were so draconian, and I'm just going to go through four of them. Firstly, there was a curfew for me personally from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. every day, and it was summertime, and in Melbourne it stays light till 9 p.m., barbecues and so forth, and I wouldn't be allowed to leave my house after 7 p.m. I'm still on bail a year and a half later, so imagine. Number two is they wanted me to delete everything off my website within 24 hours of being released. You know, and then which would be messy, and obviously a lot of work and effort goes into that. And I had seven staff.
Everything, at the time. Everything, not just what they thought was the offending incitement. Everything.
No, sorry. Everything that opposed the COVID restrictions, but everything on my website did. So effectively, it would have been the whole website. Let's be honest.
But we still are talking about more than just incitement. You're saying everything that opposed COVID restrictions, which would be not just a legitimate journalistic endeavor, but a legitimate political stance for any citizen to take. So this is welcome to Big Brother.
Yeah, look, the next two restrictions are the worst. And the first one is I cannot incite opposition to the COVID restrictions, and I cannot speak against the COVID restrictions, even at home. I was not allowed to speak against the COVID restrictions in any way, right? So it's full on communism. And you know what? If I had signed those, George, they would have just been like lurking around me to find me out. And then I would have been in prison for 3 months. So I thought I was safer in prison where I couldn't break those conditions. But also, there's no way I would sign those conditions. So I didn't sign them. And look, I was lucky I had the support to do that. I've got no kids, you know, it's a bit different than everyone else's position. So I had the ability to do it. But so I didn't sign them. I went to jail for 22 days waiting for the appeal of the bail condition. So I was never in prison for charges, if that makes sense. I was in prison awaiting appeal. But it did set a precedent. Next time someone else got arrested for incitement, he got the changed bail conditions that I got, because when I did appeal the bail conditions, the next judge at the Supreme Court agreed with everything that we said and basically said they were onerous and Monica finds loopholes, that's not a crime, and let her out of jail, please. This is ridiculous, basically. So we were right, and that set a precedent. And I'll just quickly, this is also really interesting, about 3 months after that, the police got a warrant out forcing me to give them passwords to everything in my phone, that they still have my phone in custody a year and a half later. They can't get into it, obviously. They wanted to force me to give them the password to my phone, plus passwords to Google Maps, Google Docs, Google Drive, all my Telegram, Signal, all my admin accounts, all my emails. And imagine what kind of data they would have gotten from that, right? There was just no way I was going to give that to them. I fought it in court. I lost $80,000 trying to fight it. But then the funny thing is, a week later, I had the decision to make. Do I defy the warrant and have another criminal charge on top? And also, that would be breaking bail, which would put me back in prison for 3 months regardless. But I thought I would try my luck, and I just called them and said, look, I'm not going to give it to you, but, you know, if you're going to arrest me, let me know so I can be wearing more comfortable clothes this time. And they dropped the charges 2 days later. So the warrant, so the warrant was some sort of, I guess you could say, a test. Basically, they wanted that data, and they were probably going to drop the charges anyway. But, you know, from a, I guess my ego could say I fought them at every turn, and I kind of won. They've dropped the charges, but I'm still on bail, and there's still some stuff to go. But there's, I've got no criminal charges against me. And before I finish that story, I just want to say that, like, you know, as I said briefly before, is that everyone has a different role to play. And me not having a mortgage and not having children, I was blessed to make that sacrifice and make that stand. So I feel really blessed. I don't want people to feel sorry for me, because it was actually a blessing to do that. So that's the end of the story.
Well, you are a brave woman and a brave individual, Monica, for going through all of that. Can I just ask, you're on bail, but it is not I just wanted to clarify this. What is the, what are you on bail for? Is it the incitement charge still, or something else?
Well, the weird thing is there was two incitement charges, and there was three COVID fines, like just leaving your house, basically. So there's three of those, and I'm still fighting those. So I've had I'm booked for 3 days in the magistrate's court in May for COVID fines, and I just can't believe they're wasting so much taxpayers' money on that. It's embarrassing. But I could probably apply to get my bail conditions revoked, but it would cost money, and at the moment the bail conditions aren't hard to follow. So I've just left it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, they're throwing most of these out the window, these COVID fines, anyway. So hopefully this will be too. But I just want to zero in again for people who are just tuning in about the seriousness of this situation. Here we have Monica Schmidt, who basically started up an activist organization. She was reporting on events that were actually going on. I guess you could call her an activist journalist. She was arrested under some spurious incitement charge, allegedly inciting people to go to protests during a lockdown. Now, there were bail conditions that were put in front of her that basically said that she had to take all material opposing lockdowns and all of the COVID pandemic policies in the state of Victoria off a website. She wasn't allowed to say anything publicly against any of the government's positions, either publicly or privately for that matter. I mean, in this day and age, you are right, Monica, for saying basically this was bail conditions imposing communism on you. I just find this staggering, but actually there really wasn't too much about this matter in the mainstream media or in mainstream politics. I mean, people should have been screaming from the rooftops about this, because it's just such an infringement on someone's liberty. But the media were largely silent, weren't they?
No, look, the media did actually cover it, and some were not totally
for or against you. I saw a few that were quite against you that covered it, but there wasn't. So you're surprising me by telling me that there were some that were in your favour.
Not in my favour, but they were just telling the facts. I've been imprisoned or whatever like that. Yeah, but you know, it was mentioned in Parliament by Craig Kelly and by you, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
So you know, it did get into Hansard, I guess, but obviously. Unfortunately, the way the world is now, some people were really happy that I went to prison, which is pretty hard to think about, to be honest. But yeah,
it's just nuts that those people that they obviously went clearly insane over the whole COVID pandemic thing, where people were hoping and wishing and thanking other people for being locked up or for dying or for getting sick and all the rest of it. We heard all that. It really was a form of psychosis, as far as I'm concerned, that broke out in a segment of the population. But Monica, tell us very briefly about Reignite Democracy Australia, and more importantly, Reignite Freedom, which is more of a global outfit. These are the organisations you head up. What is their purpose and how can people find more about them?
Sure. Well, if you're in Australia, reignitedemocracyaustralia.com.au is the place to go. And reignitefreedom.com is more of a global initiative. I work with people from all over the world to bring about sort of global initiatives. I think, you know, what the globalists are trying to do to us is obviously in uniform and global. So I think that there needs to be some sort of global pushback from us as well. And, you know, it's definitely working. The networking is great. But Reignite Democracy Australia, because there's a lot of a USA audience here, basically it was founded on the concept of action. It was all about emailing members of parliament, getting out and letterbox dropping, and bringing community groups together. So we had over 100 community groups. And the reason why it grew so quickly, and this is just tips for anyone else in America or somewhere else, you know, if it helps, is when people are angry about something and they find a way to channel that anger into productivity, it's just actually personally good for individuals and it makes them feel better. So even if the action itself doesn't necessarily change anything, if it makes someone feel good, they're going to enjoy that and they're going to be happy that you created that system. So the easiest ways that we can get people to feel empowered, that's what I'm all about, and connecting people. Because the lockdowns, it was all about disconnecting people. I figured, well, there must be something about human connection that they do not like. So we have to do more of it. And it's great to see so many events all over the world now. I think we are getting organized and we are getting coordinated, and that's great to see.
And I think there's some things that we engage in where we think, oh, well, that was not very fruitful or that was pointless, but we don't actually see the long-lasting impacts of them. And I want to refer to something that happened in Australia. There was a mass protest that actually, at the top of my show, the former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce referred to, which was, you know, panned by all the media and panned by a lot of the politicians. Ultimately, it opened the eyes of many politicians in Canberra privately, I know for a fact, opened the eyes of many to the angst that was out there and the size of the angst in the population. So never forget that. Monica, we're going to continue to talk about positive things that we can do to help change the world after the break. This is George Christensen on The George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
Nigel Farage. You are all over the Nicola Sturgeon situation. Former President Donald Trump has just described her as a mad leftist. I would love you, closer to the action, to give our audience an insight into the events surrounding the resignation of Nicola Sturgeon.
Nicola Sturgeon wanted Scotland to become the most progressive country in the world. The problem with all these things, you know, whether it's the gender identity legislation that she passed, which meant that a 16-year-old without medical consultation could just change legally their gender identity. And the trouble with all of this is that even though a big majority of Scots didn't believe in it, didn't want it, didn't see it as a priority, the trouble is anyone that stands up, and you know this, Ross, as well as anybody, is immediately screamed at as being a transphobe, deeply intolerant, the modern-day version of a neo-Nazi. And this is how the progressive agenda moves forward. Frankly, through bullying.
Ross Cameron on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Don't forget and don't forgive. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
This is George Christensen here on The George Christensen Show with Monica Smith, who heads up two different organizations that are linked in a way in what they're trying to achieve, Reignite Democracy Australia and Reignite Freedom, which is more of a global organization. And Monica, we spoke about some of the problems, I guess, that are out there, particularly the problems that existed during the pandemic. There's ongoing problems out of that with what the vaccine mandates have caused. And I know that your organisation is focusing on the excess deaths epidemic at the moment. I'll talk about that in a moment, but I wanted to more talk about just right now the myriad of things that we see coming into fruition, and it's all across the world, particularly the Western world, whether it be the ongoing push around gender confusion and trying to entrench the ability of teachers and others to confuse kids around gender, whether it be serious invasions of privacy like the digital identity systems that are being rolled out around the world, trying to clamp down on our financial freedom through such things as central banking digital currencies. And a lot of this stuff is emanating out of the World Economic Forum and our good friend Klaus Schwab, who, if you ever had a James Bond villain lookalike competition, he would win it hands down. And even in his funny dress and costumes that he comes up with. So, look, I note, though, that the work that you are doing, particularly through Reignite Freedom and the global walkout campaign that was run by Reignite Freedom, is talking about how everyday people can push back against some of these things that we see heading over the hills. And it's just very important that we talk about that for a moment, because, Monica, this stuff is just so big. And when you talk about institutions like the World Economic Forum or the United Nations or some other transnational body like the World Health Organization that is pushing something, little old me can just think, this is too big. These people are too powerful. They can do this. What can I do against it? But this global walkout campaign has actually put in place the little things that people can do that can push against that. So I wanted you to tell us how you come up with it, but more importantly, some of the steps that have already rolled out that you think are the most important steps in the global walkout campaign.
Great. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, there's not going to be one hero, one savior, one campaign, one organization, or one politician that's going to just like fix everything. Right. But I think if everyone was doing their bit or at least followed through with their ideas, we'd definitely be in a better place. So the global walkout originally, I'll be honest with you, it was meant to be a 5-day walkout from work and school and all that. It was actually supposed to be kind of a global strike, but the problem is it just came at the wrong time, and the passion wasn't really there. It was inspired by the Canadian truckies, and by the time that I got the campaign finished, that sort of feeling had moved on. So I had to evolve it differently. And so I decided to do weekly small steps, hoping that tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people around the world can take small steps every single week to, one, feel empowered, but also the main thing is to disconnect from the conveniences that are actually going to be used to enslave us. Globalism is absolutely dependent on us needing their services, their convenience, the tap and pay, the this, that, and the other. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, we've enjoyed it. We've enjoyed the technology, haven't we? The Bluetooth and the Wi-Fis and the this and that and the other, until it's starting to turn around on us. You know, so basically at the moment we're at step number 19. So I've been at this for a while, and you know, for some people it really every week, it's every 2 weeks now, but because it was just a lot of work, but you know, people really enjoy it. So the best one that we've ever had was step number one. We really came off with a bang, and Catherine Austin Fitz actually announced it. And the campaign is called Keep Cash Alive. So it's exactly what you're talking about. Now, keeping cash alive, again, will not stop the globalist in itself, but it's actually really empowering to use cash, especially when you have the exact change. There's something beautiful about it. But anyway, the thing about this campaign is it's not just about keeping cash alive. There's actually a printout that there's 10 little printouts per page. So it's very cheap to print at home and cut into 10. And they're small enough to just put into your wallet. And every time you pay with cash as a customer, especially at new shops anyway, you just give them that little piece of paper with your cash. And I always just say like, oh, here's a little piece of paper to read later. We're just doing a campaign to raise awareness of keeping cash alive. And I've never had a bad experience. And I've even walked into random restaurants about 3 hours away, and I saw one of the flyers on the table. So it's, look, it's not going to change the world straight away, but it actually opens up a lot of conversations as well. And we have a business edition that you can print out an A4 piece of paper and put it on your counter and ask customers to pay cash, because it's more money in your pocket at the end of the day, because you don't have to pay for transaction fees and stuff.
Yeah,
so that's been the most effective. But you know, we encourage people to shop locally. I'm just kind of scrolling through. We've encouraged people to bank with smaller banks or credit unions as opposed to the big banks. But not every country actually has that opportunity. We've even done health related ones, like spend 3 hours in the sun this week at some point. We've also had watch the new documentary, The Real Anthony Fauci. So it really varies. Brilliant. To try to keep it exciting. And we've also done a curriculum awareness week, talking about what you spoke about just before. A lot of parents have no idea what books their children are reading. This all comes down to globalism, because they've made parents so busy to pay the bills and keep up with the Joneses, right? They've made them so busy that they have no idea what's going on at school unless something crazy happens. So Curriculum Awareness Week was step number 12. And there was a letter that you could actually send to the school and ask, or you could go and make an appointment, ask what books your kids are reading. And then there's a follow-up statement to say, a letter you can put on your file, I do not, you know, allow my child to read this book. And we had some parents calling, emailing us saying that the school wouldn't let them opt their child out of that book.
Unbelievable.
Some of these kids' books, I mean, you know, right? So, and once your kid has lost its innocence, it's gone forever. So people really need to be aware, and parents need to take some responsibility.
That's right.
For themselves as well.
The problem is, I don't want to go down this track too much because we want to talk about bigger things, but the problem is this view that permeates the education sector, and it's starting to become mainstream that they are the ones who ultimately are in charge of the children rather than the parents. And, you know, no. That is very much a cultural Marxist belief that government is there to look after all of its citizens, including kids, and the parents are just there as some sort of people that just hover around them. And if you think that my view is incorrect, if you think that my view is hyperbole, have a look at Scotland, where under the now gone First Minister over there, they proposed, Nicola Sturgeon, that is, they proposed bringing in an office of the guardian, office of the children's guardian, where every child would be appointed a guardian of the state that could actually intervene in disputes between children and their parents. I kid you not, this was an actual proposal that was adopted. I believe it was actually passed by the Scottish Parliament. It was knocked on the head because of the European Human Rights Court or something like that. It'd be the first time one of these transnational bodies has done anything good. But if you want to know what the ultimate is in terms of this cultural Marxist push about children, it's that, to get kids away from their families, removed from their family sort of beliefs, and just inculcated with beliefs of the state. And that's what it's all about, Monica. So I'm glad that one's come to the attention of Reignite Freedom and also the global walkout. But let's go to some other points that you've raised.
So one of them was to ditch loyalty cards. Now, it's called something different, like membership cards, for example. So you go to a shop and they ask you to sign up. And, like 5-10 years ago, I don't know about you, George, but I was giving away my email address and my phone number like it was, going out of fashion. I had no problem with it. But obviously now it's a bit different. So I just think it's important that we think about where our data is going at all times. We don't need loyalty cards. We don't. And every time you use it, they obviously know where you are. Also consciously buying things. So when you buy something, if you try to trail it back to who's making the money, now you can't always avoid buying things from China because unfortunately we Australian markets just don't make everything. But if you think about where the money's going, I think you could make better decisions to obviously support local businesses and things like that. And look, like I said, all these steps that I'm explaining, they're not going to defeat globalism in themselves. But if we had 100 steps like this for the next 2 years and we ended up getting millions of people on it, you know, we could definitely make real change.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Now, let's go back to the issue that I touched on at the start of this particular session, and that was excess deaths. I note that Reignite Democracy Australia has actually just sent out a missive the other day called Excess Death Awareness. It's a campaign that you're bringing up. Interestingly, I raised this with the former Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce. He really didn't want to talk about it. And I find that to be the case with a lot of people in the political field and in the media field and elsewhere. But what are you doing? What is Reignite Democracy Australia doing in regards to the issue of this 16% increase in deaths in Australia across 2022?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's the reason of, people are dying. That's pretty serious. But secondly, I thought it might be a great way to raise some awareness and plant some seeds. So this campaign, there's nothing about what we project might be the reason for this. I mean, I don't need to say it. We all kind of have an idea, unless we're proven differently, why it's so big right now. But this campaign has nothing to do. It doesn't say anything about that. The point is to plant seeds and hope that the truth comes to the surface. And so we have a truck that's driving around Melbourne right now with a big graph on the side that shows the 16% increase. Now, just for the audience, this is very interesting. It really makes the data make a lot more sense. We actually did independent data over the last 66 years. The highest ever excess mortality rate in 1 year was in 1960 something, and it was 4.4%. And the average over the last 66 years is minus 1.6%. So 16% isn't just an accident, like, oh, there's a few more car crashes. No. This is like monumental front page newspaper every day, everywhere, every channel. It is insane that it's not being talked about. So I know it's a great way to raise awareness. I hit the streets today, actually. You're the first person I'm going to share this with because I haven't done anything with it yet, but I hit the streets today in Brisbane, in Australia, to talk about the excess deaths. And I really got something from that I didn't expect, George, and that is that out of 12 people, not one of them had even heard a whisper about this. And
unbelievable.
Yep. And every single one of them were concerned about the fact that they didn't know. And
unbelievable.
Concerned about the fact that why don't they know? Why isn't it mainstream? Why isn't it front page? And the last thing is they want to know why. Now, I went back and I found out that according to the government data, which I don't really trust, but let's just trust them for argument's sake, they say that 6.8% of that 16% is because of COVID deaths. That still leaves 9.2% unexplained, which is double any year ever in the last 66 years. It's unexplained. Yeah. No one's talking about it. No one's investigating it. And they're just pretending nothing's happening. Now, George, it could be suicide. It could be lockdowns. It might not be what we think it is. Maybe, right? Let's just say, for argument's sake.
I doubt it. I think it is what we think it is.
But I hit the street.
And that's the jab. Look, we're on a non-censorship platform here. Let's just call a spade a spade. It's the jab. It quite clearly is. I mean, when you have this many deaths occurring, I mean, and I'm looking at the truck that you've done up, and it's got this graph on it, and there's a baseline, and every year the excess deaths number just hovers around this baseline. It goes up a little bit, as you said, in the 60s, it goes down a little bit in the 70s, but it hovers around this baseline, and then we get to 2022, and it's like the proverbial J curve. It's just through the roof. So, and the question is, well, what happened differently? What was done to a whole swathe of the population over the course of 2020 and 2021 and 2022? There was only one thing that was done, and that was inject people with an experimental drug that actually had no long-term safety data behind it. So I see all of the excuses as to why it's not that and why it can't be that. I don't see proof points for it from those that are saying, no, it's not the jab. All I see is just excuses. So well done to you on this.
Well, can I just say quickly on that point?
Yes.
We are going to, if you go to excess death stats.com. Australia is just the first one. We're planning on doing other countries as well, and we do need help gaining that data. So if you go to accessdeathstats.com, you will be able to help us out to do this for other countries, because it's happening all over the world.
Get onto it, folks. I mean, this is, it's for real what you're saying. I mean, and that's the thing, that if it was just Australia, we could then say, okay, well, there's something curious. Maybe it was Daniel Andrews' long lockdowns that caused mental health issues that's causing these excess deaths, or, you know, people being kept away from hospitals. But it's not just Australia. It's New Zealand. It's Canada. It's the US. It's the UK. It's throughout Europe. You know, it's in every country around the world where there was a high proportion of people that were vaccinated. And I don't know when the blinkers are going to come off, Monica. Mm. I don't know when, you know, finally people are going to get it, and particularly the people in political power and the media. But we have just performed something on the bulk of humankind that if it's not criminal, it borders on criminal. And I think that this work in pointing out to people these excess death stats is going to be vital in opening up eyes like you've done today. So well done to Reignite Democracy Australia on this excess deaths campaign that they're launching. And that website, again, if you want to go to it, is excessdeathstats.com, E-X-C-E-S-S, deathstats.com. We're going to have to go to a break, and we'll return with Monica Smith after that break here on The George Christensen Show on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We got some real problems coming up in Europe, it looks like, over the next 5 or 6 weeks. Now, we've been telling you here on TNT, and we've been briefing our clients, believe me, and my company, WeatherBell.com, about how cold the endgame winter was going to be in Europe and in the United States. But Europe is already taking the brunt of the cold, and this is not letting up. Looks like it's centered over Spain and France for right now. It's colder than average in the UK, but it appears to me that will spread northeast into Germany. Now, it's a fortunate thing that we're late in the season, because the normal high temperatures are coming up. That's the good news. The bad news is this is going to be like normal for the dead of winter. And it's not just going away. There's going to be snow with it in the UK, all the way down to Spain. It's been snowing more than average in Northern Africa. Occasionally it does snow in North Africa. So if you think it's freaky weather, it might snow around Los Angeles. We're seeing snow all the way into the mountains of North Africa because so much cold air is across Europe. Blame it on climate change. Not. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government delivered by the NFF.
This is the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for the final segment of this three-hour marathon George Christensen Show that we've had today, where we've spoken with the former Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, with Dave Pellow of the Church and State Summit. And we're joined right here, right now, with Monica Smith, who is a powerhouse of a woman. She was locked up in jail for her political advocacy here in Australia, which is just an absolute disgrace that happened in what should be an erstwhile democratic country. But Monica heads up two organisations, Reignite Democracy Australia and the more global-oriented Reignite Freedom. And under the Reignite Freedom banner, you're doing something which I, when I was first heard about it, I sort of thought, "Whoa, what are you doing here?" It's like goading the enemy, poking them in the eye, Monica, telling them, "Come on, bring it on, Klaus Schwab and all of you Davos elite, you Davos devils." But there is a campaign that you have at the moment basically saying, we are ready for whatever you're going to throw at us. Tell me why you are wanting to poke the bully in the eye and tell him to bring it on.
Well, I'll just clarify that it's not my campaign. There's a big group working on it globally, so which is great, which is why I think it's going to be successful. But look, to be honest, I'm sick of sitting around waiting for things to go bad and being afraid of when it's going to go bad. I think that fear, we know fear is a weapon, but yet so many of us are still fearful. And I understand why, obviously. There's a reason to be fearful. However, just because they have these plans and just because they're powerful and they've got lots of money does not mean they are doing well, and it does not mean that they are going to succeed. Everything that they want to do really needs mass compliance. Now, I understand they did get a lot of compliance with COVID, but a lot has changed since then, since the crisis of the lockdowns and things like that. I think that globally, if we can get a new message, a new tone, a new sentiment out there to all the freedom lovers that we already have, I think we have enough already. If we can get them to start feeling like we're ready instead of fearing what's going to come, I think the sooner that we can goat them into doing whatever they want to do, the better it's going to be and the quicker we're going to get through it. It's going to happen, George. Like, we can't actually stop them from trying. They're going to try. The quicker they try, the better, I think, because if they have time, they're going to use convenience to lure the average people in. But if they try to do it too soon, then they're probably going to wake a lot of people up and they're going to join our community. So I actually do honestly believe that we are ready. But I think the sentiment itself can take fear away from the general people in the freedom movement and start preparing instead of fearing. That's kind of the concept.
And I'm looking at this on your Facebook page, the New Reignite Freedom Facebook page, the little picture that you got here. Hey, globalists, you overplayed your hand. We see you. We know your plans. Guess what? We are ready. All freedom lovers, groups and organizations need to show up in unity to send a clear message. We are many, we are united, and we are ready. And what you're talking about there is an event that Reignite Freedom is wanting to happen globally on May the 20th, which is a few months from now, at noon in capital cities worldwide, for there to be some form of demonstration or rally. Is that what's being proposed here, Monica?
Yeah, so the epicenter of it is actually in Portugal, and it's all around the Bilderberg Club is meeting in Lisbon, Portugal on that weekend.
Oh, right.
So, so there's a big global event there. People are actually traveling from other countries to go to Portugal to be there. So a group of us thought, well, maybe it should be a global thing. And the point, just so that people understand, there's no top-down management of this event. All the resources are there. Anyone can host the event that they want. And the group that I'm working with, we have a big platform between us and all the networks you could possibly need within the freedom movement. So if you have an event, we promote it for you. The group does, but it's up to you what you do. You could have a big party in the street if you want. You could have a march. You could have a festival. You can do whatever you want. The point is an event on the 20th of May around the world. And the unity message is also extremely important, because I believe that the globalists have given us some space, hoping that we self-destruct, because human nature is that once there isn't a common crisis anymore, we're fighting in between each other. But I'm hoping that maybe this sort of message, asking freedom organizations around the world to remember that we have a common enemy, which is globalism, despite all the other little things underneath it, if we can just all turn up just to show them that, hey, we're all going to say no. So if you're going to try this thing, you better try it soon, because we're just getting bigger, we're getting better, we're getting more organized. So you may as well push that button now, or else we might get too big for you. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a website there I noticed for the campaign. It's www.weareready.world. You can go to that website to find more and more about it. Just bringing this whole thing close to home, it's interesting. I'm not sure whether you've goaded them into this, but I see now the hand is being played on the digital identity agenda in Australia. And this is interesting. This has been one of these ones that I've been watching for quite some time, and I know you've been watching for quite some time too. There already is a digital identity system in place in Australia. It's called MyGovID, and that I believe, is essentially what the digital identity system will be. It's just going to go from one that's voluntary into one that's forced, or where there's compulsion for every citizen to actually have a digital ID in Australia. Like many of these things, my concern isn't necessarily, and I really do underline the word necessarily, of the digital ID system itself. It's what it might become. But my concern is also around the digital ID system, because it's not necessary. It really isn't. And we fought against something like this, people of my ideological ilk, back in the 1980s, when they proposed this Australia card, which was going to be this nationwide identity card. And it was seen as a breach of freedom and of privacy, and an unnecessary one at that. The digital identity system will be exactly the same. And we know, Monica, this is going to be intertwined with the central banking digital currency system that's going to come out. And ultimately, where these globalists want to go is to intertwine it with some form of social credit system where we can all be controlled through pressure from peers, pressure from authority, pressure that emanates from finance. Ultimately, our lives won't be ours after that. They'll be in the hands of the elitists, or the so-called elitists. What do you think is going to happen in Australia, given that the government of the day has actually shown its hand and said that they're going to roll out a digital identity system in the country? There's going to be legislation in the latter part of this year. Do you think that the men and women across this nation that stood up against the COVID pandemic are going to be able to be unified and ready to stand up against this threat to freedom and privacy? What do you think it's going to take to actually defeat this?
I definitely think we're ready for it, actually, because when the mandates came in, obviously, we all know that if everyone who didn't want to get it said no at the same time, it would have been defeated. And everyone knows that. And I think they're not going to let that happen again. You know, we've been tested, you know, people like you and I have been tested. We already know what it's like to be on the outskirts of society. And we survived in some way. We felt empowered almost by it. And if that's what it takes again, we'll do it again. Because unfortunately, what they've done, unfortunately for them, is their tyranny and the way that they treated us, it's actually caused so many people to become extremely powerful within themselves and within communities. In fact, I think most of the people that have gone through what we've been through are actually better people because of it. And actually, you know, maybe COVID needed to happen for these types of people to emerge. So people are very empowered, and I think they're willing to do what it takes. Maybe we need to go out into the bush and live off the land for a few years and wait for things to cool down. I don't know. But I know a lot of people that are willing to do whatever it takes to hold the line. And we didn't hold the line when we had the chance to. And I don't think we're going to ruin that chance again. They can try. But I really think with this, I really, just to give your audience a reason why I think that, for example, in Melbourne, Australia, we only have 6 million people in the whole state. We had a protest against one legislation. 600,000 people were at that event, at least 500,000 to 600,000, biggest event in Australian history at the time. And
it was the proposal to have permanent pandemic powers, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And the bill went through despite that. But the fact that 10% of the entire population, and that's just adults, think of all the children that are a part of that 6 million. And for every one person that is protesting, there's probably at least one or two at home that wish they could be there. So in theory, potentially 40% of the entire adult population was on the streets in one day. That gives me a lot of courage that if we're push comes to shove, we can say no. And just one more thing on that is that since the common crisis, which united all of us on the streets, since then, a lot of people have woken up, but we don't know who they are because there's been no reason to protest, really. But because of the mandates and because of the draconian nature of things and the police, all the bad publicity around the police and the way they treated people, it's gotten out. And I think we've doubled our community. We just don't know who they are yet. And if there's a common crisis, it's actually going to be the best thing for us because we need that common crisis again. I think a lot of people are getting anxious waiting. So bring on the digital ID. Let's get it done with.
Yeah, well, let's do it rather. Let's have it done and dusted and in the dust, because that's where it deserves to be. And I really do mean that, because to me, this is one of the sort of seminal confrontations that there's going to be. If we fail on digital ID, that is a very – it's not the war lost, but I've got to tell you, it's a very, very important strategic battle that will be lost. So we need to win on it. We need to overcome it. We need to get – I think the first thing will be, you know, and this might be a minor miracle, or it might be a major miracle, I don't know. The former government, which is now the opposition here in Australia, that's comprised of the Liberal and National parties, who actually devised and crafted the agenda, the legislation. It was under their watch that all of the laws and the agenda and the whole, you know, remit for digital identity was set up. It would be good to have them oppose it. And I think that that is possible. That is possible, and that would be a major help in the fight. Yeah, that may be a major miracle. I don't know. We'll see. But what steps do you think? Look, I'm not either, but I need to remain forever an optimist, Monica, because you know, we need to defeat it, and I don't care who I embrace in the defeat of it, because this proposal is going to be bad for freedom. It's going to be bad for privacy, and that means it's going to be bad for every single Australian. And when it's bad for every single Australian, it's going to be bad for Australia. And again, it's not just us that are fighting it. You type in digital identity and any country's name after that in Google or any other search engine, and you are going to find that there are proposals in the US, in Canada, in the UK, in Portugal, probably in even in third world countries. I see that there are these proposals as well. So, where does that all emanate from? I wonder. Could it be a little place in Switzerland called Davos? It is there, and this is, I guess, a philosophical problem that I have with digital ID, apart from the undermining of privacy, is that there's no Australian, well, that I know of at least, and probably that you know of, that's ever woken up and gone, you know what's wrong in my life right now? I don't have a digital identity. There's been no one that stopped a politician in the street, that's written to a politician, emailed a politician, called up a politician, or protested, or written a letter to the editor, or done anything advocating for a digital identity system. And the way democracy is supposed to work is that our laws come from the ground up. But here is Klaus Schwab and the Davos elite bringing in this digital identity system into our country from the top down. This is the ultimate in foreign influence. So very quickly, Monica, what are three steps at least that you think that Australians should engage in right now and can start engaging in to stop the digital identity system? I'll put you on the spot, I know.
Three steps, if there's some you have in mind. So if you go to reignitefreedom.com/initiatives, we actually have a digital ID flyer. Now, it's very non-confrontational. It's not conspiracy written, not that we are anyway, but you know what I mean? Very, very easy steps. And there's even a documentary on the link on the flyer as well. They're black and white. They're easy to print from home. Do that. You'll feel good about that. The second thing is I would start to disconnect from the conveniences of banking now. So delete the banking app on your phone, use cash, you know, try to pay for bills at the post office. Now, it might not seem like a big deal, but it's you making a stand against the digitization of all your spending and all your money. Don't use loyalty cards. Basically, imagine that you can, everything that you want to pay with, make sure they don't know it's you. Now, if you need to do online banking, or if you need to buy something online, you know you can buy a prepaid credit card from the post office or even from the petrol station, and you can pay for things anonymously. There is no reason why you cannot get into the habit of every single purchase of yours being anonymous. So those are my suggestions.
That's excellent. Well, you've done very well, Monica, and I want to, and I hope you keep on keeping on, and more power to you, and also Reignite Freedom, which you can find at reignitefreedom.com, Reignite Democracy Australia, which you can find at reignitedemocracyaustralia.com.au, and your campaigns, the two of which we've focused on, excessdeathstats.com, and the Global Walkout, as well as the other campaign that you've got. So many campaigns, Monica.
Gosh, good on you're making me tired just talking about it now. Gosh.
Well, that's all we've got time for here on the George Christensen Show. I really do want to thank you, Monica. Thank you, all listeners, for tuning in. And over to you, studio. Great to be here on TNT Radio.